The College Game Day podcast is presented by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises.
We got a real simple plan. One man, one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
If you're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven.
This might be college football heaven.
This is ESPN's College Game Day podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel is Reese Davis.
The chances of a letdown in Morgantown. Could the Vols get caught peeking ahead? This is the College Game Day podcast for Friday, October 28th. Reese Davis, Pete Thamel, and Bill Connolly here to futilely swing at making picks. But I suppose that Pete will have the best shot this week, Bill, because he's making picks on his wife's birthday. So perhaps as a present, he can turn in a winning record for her this week.
I'm gonna get used to buying dinner because that's where I am in the picks, and that's what one does on his wife's birthday. So
hey, two of us had winning records last week, and I just want to 4-3 is basically 7-0 at this point. So we're doing great.
You and Pete, because I was 3-4, I think. Is that right, Taylor? I was 3-4.
Yeah, we were correct. Right together.
You took the Bruins, correct, Reese? Because when we were watching the game.
I did. Yeah. And you know what? In that game, guys, we're standing there and literally 90 seconds before kickoff, Chip comes over and says something, because I'd sent a question with Gene Wojciechowski about one of Chip's favorite restaurants in Eugene closing. And I wanted Gene to sort of set
the
it
electric
up.
Like, station. The electric let's station, make sure it gets its RIP, the electric station.
To ask like he was going to ask something really serious and then hit him with that and see what happened. And so Chip comes over like just, you know, a few seconds before kickoff and says, yeah, Gene tried to get me on that or something in reference to that. And when he walked away, I felt so good about my UCLA pick. I said, if Chip's that loose right now, I was like Bruins by 20. And man, Oregon was really good. You see that one coming in your numbers, Bill?
Well, I saw not a lot of stops coming. That was kind of the key to you know, who's forcing field goals. And the answer was Oregon. You know, that was basically the difference in the game. I think they, two scoreless drives each total, but UCLA settled for field goals. And that was the difference.
Bill, the picks we're about to make. This is, to me, a gut feel week. I'm not going to give away anything because I'm not sure I can quite bring myself to do it. Like, when West Virginia is giving up, you know, 700 yards a game passing.
Listen to your gut, Reese. Remember, you know, from early weeks
coming in. I know, but what I'm saying is there are a lot of games where Tennessee, Kentucky is another one. I don't think it makes any sense in the world to pick Kentucky. I'm not even tempted on that one. But there are some other ones that are tempting for no reason. So when you are on your formula right there, are you tempted to go with your gut? Or are you so locked in to putting everything in your formula that your formula becomes your gut?
Well, I definitely trust my formula more than my gut. There's absolutely no doubt about that. I disagree with it sometimes. But no, I think what happens is as the year goes on, like history becomes or circumstance becomes more of a factor. We start thinking about trap games. We start thinking about when these two teams played, like Ohio State, Penn State. Every Ohio State game against Penn State is a 13-point win now. And we have that in our head, basically. I think that kind of colors whatever we've seen of teams this year. We start thinking in other terms. And I'm not going to say that's right or wrong. I think it's probably 50-50 like everything else. But I do think that it makes everything more complicated as the year goes on.
Boy, that's a tease line on TCU. I'm just looking right now. That's an
there's some good lines this week.
Somebody knows something line as old coach.
There's these lines have been ridiculous, and they were ridiculous on Sunday. They've only gotten it's a tough week.
And the Syracuse is like only a field goal, and maybe even under that now against Notre Dame. So we've set it all up, Taylor. Why don't we start making some picks here and have some fun and see if we can get this thing out of reverse and going forward with our picks. The race for the ribeye.
It is good!
Teddy would really like that. He's into mooing, by the way.
So
I haven't yet started weaning him on the podcast, but he does like a good, he has a little book where you can hit the animal noises, and the moo is his favorite.
He loves that moo. He goes wild for it. That's hilarious. All right, boys, we've got, well, first of all, the stakes are the stakes. Last week's results, Pete and Bill went 4-3, Reese 3-4 out of the six games, and plus the lock, 7 total. This week, we've got 7 games to pick plus your locks. A little bit of a weird week. We normally try and pick games with tighter spreads, but you know, that it can't always be the case here. So we're going to start with Ohio State, a 15.5 point favorite heading to Penn State, noon game. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill for this one.
I said on Wednesday on the podcast that I felt like I was more impressed with Michigan in its game against Penn State than I became concerned about Penn State. And that is true. But that being said, giving up 400 yards rushing to a team that is, while with a high completion percentage, but not necessarily terribly effective throwing the ball downfield, is cause for concern. Penn State pass defense has been really good statistically. They haven't seen anything at all like what's about to roll in there on Saturday afternoon. They Penn State allows just over 50%. They only allow touchdowns on 40% of their red zone trips. Ohio State's great at those, and those numbers are going to get worse for Penn State this weekend. I'm not calling a blowout because the Nittany Lions will fight their tails off. They'll find a way to get back in the game, or at least get back closer to the number, I think, for the Ohio State game. So I'll be chewing my nails down to the cuticles about whether the spread actually gets covered. But since 2000, Penn State has beaten one AP top five team, and they've lost 19 times. Of course, the win was against Ohio State in 16, but it's not going to happen this time. And I'm going to take the Buckeyes, who I believe to be the best team in the country, and lay the 15.5 on the road and sort of let them stake their claim to being the real number one.
So I really feel like there's distinct differences between this year's Ohio State team and previous year's Ohio State teams. And those would be magnified if Jackson Smith and Jigma has been healthy all year. But I really feel like the differences have come in the trenches, and obviously with the new scheme that Jim Knowles has brought in. So Penn State has kind of found ways to hang around with Ohio State, you know, during Ryan Day's time there. There was a famous Will Levis game when he came in off the bench in Columbus a couple years back. Penn State was sort of vexing to Ohio State last year. I think Ohio State has evolved enough where they can go win this game by 3 touchdowns. I really feel like they'll be able to run the ball consistently behind an offensive line that I really think has been revamped under Justin Fry. When you look at DeJuan Jones and his leap this year, he's taken at one tackle. Paris Johnson's been great at the other tackle, and they've been very solid inside. I just feel like there's enough soundness to Ohio State where before there was some feast or famine. I think there's enough soundness where they can go in, push Penn State around, which Penn State showed against Michigan it was susceptible to, and they can stop Penn State's young tailbacks with a good push up front. So I think the Buckeyes, I don't think they're going to win 42-3, but I think they can consistently dominate, outscore them by a touchdown a quarter, and you know, get out of there with some type of 35-10 win.
Yeah, we were just talking about going against your numbers. I'm going to go against my numbers here. I can come up with plenty of reasons why Penn State could or should cover. I mean, like I said, they lose every game by 13, it seems like, and the line's under that, so there you go. And my numbers say, you know, something closer to Ohio State by 11, because Penn State's defense really is excellent. But I don't think my numbers are really even the sports books have caught up to Ohio State yet. I'm looking at, you know, their performance against SP Plus projections. They were plus 29 against Toledo. Like, they won by 29 more than expected, plus 16 against Wisconsin, plus 7 against Rutgers, plus 11 against Michigan State, plus 22 last week. They are just destroying teams far and away beyond what the projections suggest. And they're number one overall in SP Plus because of it. So I hope I'm wrong, because there's nothing. Ohio State, Penn State in State College, you know, with a tight game and all that. 2016 was one of my favorite games in recent memory, but I don't really, until Ohio State shows some sort of vulnerability, I'm not gonna pick against them right now. This was, I rank unbeatens. Every Tuesday I have a ranking the unbeatens piece. And so I had like a, for the six remaining, I had one big question for each about like a weakness or a vulnerability or whatever. And I had nothing to work with from Ohio State. They're, statistically, they have been by far the most weakness-free team out there. And until we see one, I'm not gonna pick against them.
Yeah, you know, it's, I think it's going to be fun for a while. Pete mentioned the offensive lineman for Ohio State. Penn State has another one to keep an eye on if they can get that ground game going. Olu Fashanu is a guy that, you know, from what I read, I might be talking about on draft night very soon. And Clifford looked good.
Thursday night of draft night.
Right. First night. Right, exactly. And, you know, I think Penn State finding the tight end last week was helpful, but, man, I don't know, Pete, you said 35. If I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's 42-3 either, but I think it might be 45-17, something like that.
Yeah. I hope it's a great game, right?
I do too. Like,
just, sure. You know, it's one of the few chances we have at a great high profile game this week. So I certainly always, you know, root for competitiveness, but just oof, man. And like, it feels like Ohio State could have scored 100 against Iowa. They just kicked a bunch of field goals too. Mm-hmm. So there was nothing about that performance that gave against a very high end defense that gave me any hesitation that they could go score.
Right.
It is good.
TCU, the criminally underrated Horned Frogs, in my view, are a 7.5-point favorite going to Morgantown. Could be a little bit of a dicey spot. Noon game. I'm sure they're going to be revved up and ready for it. Let's go, Pete, Bill, Reese.
Well, Reese, our friend Pat McAfee certainly let the world know what he thinks of his underachieving Mountaineers during our slot machine segment in game day on Saturday. He is not trusting Neil Brown's process. So I looked at this line and I said, somebody knows something. And I really wanted to pick the Mountaineers because I would love like a good old fashioned noon upset, storm the field. It's one of the best environments in college football. It's a fan base that really thought they'd have a chance to win this year with JT Daniels coming, and they just really haven't won. So that said, and again, I'm not gonna channel my inner Bill Connolly and overly statistically analyze this, but when you are 117th in passing yards allowed, 116th in team passing efficiency defense, 117th in scoring defense, 102nd in turnover margin, I cannot in good conscience pick you, not only to pull an upset, but to cover. So if they only lose, 57-50 and cover, God bless them. But I am not going to go on that roller coaster ride with them. I think I'm going to ride with my guy Quentin Johnston, who could have 7 touchdowns on Saturday. And I just can't bring myself to pick against TCU because their offense is that good and West Virginia's defense has been that bad.
Yeah, I mean, I was shocked that this wasn't like a 10-point line. 10 feels about right to me. It's just like to pick West Virginia, you have to assume letdown game. And the problem with that is that a lot of we're only like 50% right when we predict letdown game. Sometimes the better team just goes out and handles its business. So, TCU is very comfortable in close games. And so even if it is a letdown, maybe they probably still prevail, I guess. But yeah, it has definitely been a roller coaster for West Virginia this year. They looked legitimately awesome against an undermanned Virginia Tech, but they still looked really good. They out-physicaled Baylor. They figured out how to define that game and win it. And then they just got lapped by Texas Tech last week. So maybe they respond well, but TCU is just so much more trustworthy here. And I'm going to assume it's more of like a 10 to 13 point win for TCU.
Are you too familiar with Hypnotoad?
Apparently, it's an even bigger hit in the stadium than it is on the internet.
It is it's a big hit. It's an animated amphibian character. It supposedly can hypnotize people into writing good things about all glory to Hypnotoad. And you two apparently have fallen victim to Hypnotoad. I love TCU and the way they play. They're a lot of fun. Your stats are correct, Pete. There's no reason at all to pick West Virginia. There's no reason to think this game's going to do anything other than turn out the way the t-shirt that Max Duggan wore in the post game the other night that said Frogs by 90 with a Hypnotoad on it. I mean, even when you get TCU down 3 scores, you're not going to beat them. They're just going to come back. The Horned Frogs are just the second team in 20 seasons to rally from 17-point deficits against ranked opponents in consecutive games, joining 2016 Tennessee. 2016, which Tennessee, which went on to win the SEC. Oh, no, they didn't. Now, did they? Now, 2016 Tennessee got a little sideways after playing with fire over and over again. And I say 11 o'clock kickoff in Fort Worth, at least games in Morgantown, so it'll be 12, but work with me here. 11 a.m. kickoff, body clock time, early morning kick. We've just won 4 ranked games in a row. We just came from 3-score deficits twice, including a double overtime win over a really good team. These guys, they give up a billion yards to Texas Tech, of all people. This is a layup. Give me West Virginia in the points.
Ooh, I wanted to do that. I just couldn't do it. Just couldn't do it.
This is a game that's guaranteed to make you feel stupid one way or the other.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Hey, whatever happens. Yeah.
I almost took West Virginia as a super dog last week. That would have felt stupid. They got beaten by a million. I was glad that I talked myself out of that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Pretty confounding line here, guys. Notre Dame headed to the Carrier Dome. Syracuse only a 2-point favorite. Let's go Bill Reese Pete.
Notre Dame is absolutely confounding this year. Not maybe not as confounding as West Virginia, to acknowledge that. But, you know, it feels like we get a pretty good read on them, you know, what they did to North Carolina, what they did to BYU. Then they just absolutely stink up the place against Stanford. They did about what was expected last week against UNLV, and that's fine. But knowing it really feels like a matchups thing here for Notre Dame. If they can just lean on you and play physically and be the bigger team, then, you know, they can control a game, win close games. That's fine. I guess that's why the line is as close as it is. You know, Syracuse 3-3-5, more speed than size, et cetera, et cetera. So maybe the matchups are bad here. My numbers are telling me to pick Notre Dame, and I can't make myself do it, but I've already disagreed with them a little bit. Prove me wrong, Syracuse. I'm gonna go with the physical team. I'm going to talk myself out of what I just thought. But I think Syracuse might be too fast and might end up, it's going to be either a 2-point Notre Dame win or a 17-point Syracuse win. And I think Syracuse win would be more fun to watch. I'll go Notre Dame, though.
I sort of have a lot of the same feelings about this game, Bill, because a lot of it is because of Notre Dame's inconsistency. Everything in me wants to pick Notre Dame, and I can't really tell you why, because I really, really was impressed with Syracuse. I know Clemson helped them with the turnovers and so forth, but I thought they really acquitted themselves well and looked legit. I mean, and also I want to say this too. Dino Babers, doff of the fedora, my friend. How great is it when in his Monday news conference, he was questioned about how many times Sean Tucker got the ball. I think McDonough even brought it up on the broadcast. And Dino just owned it, said inexcusable not to get Tucker the ball more. And the management at time, he confirmed a mistake. Good for you, Dino Babers. I mean, I want them to win because I like the way he handles his business and or handled his business in this situation like that. Just answered it and owned it. Didn't, you know, get all testy and defensive to legitimate questions. They won't make that mistake again. Sean Tucker's going to get the ball a lot, I would imagine. And because of that, I want to feel like there's a bounce back for Syracuse at home. But I don't know. I just feel like this feels like a Notre Dame game to me. So I'm gonna go with the Irish and take the points.
I'm going to agree with Reese. This game is going to be a slog, and I think it's going to be low scoring. I think it's going to be dictated by both defenses, and I don't expect to see a glut of passing touchdowns. Notre Dame is extremely limited at the quarterback position right now with Drew Pine. They're also limited with the skill players they have on the outside. So that said, I do feel like Notre Dame has sort of slowly started to craft a little bit of an identity by moving the ball on the ground. And its young tackles are growing up. They've got three bell cow tailbacks. And I really feel like they can find a way to go up there and win a game. These next two games are really going to, you know, help define Marcus Freeman's first season at Notre Dame. If you can win at Syracuse, you know, against top 20 team, and then beat Clemson at home, you know, a lot of people will forget about that you know, mind-bending Marshall loss. I do feel like since that North Carolina win, which really now in retrospect looks like a pretty good win, yeah, to go there and win on the road, that Notre Dame has found itself some. Obviously, they did lose to Stanford at home. I'm not ignoring that, but I feel like this is a low scoring slobber knocker. It's kind of come down to last play. For as much as we remember the Syracuse that you know, really went toe to toe with Clemson and Death Valley, there's also the Syracuse that went toe to toe with Virginia on that Friday night. Yeah. So the truth's somewhere in the middle, and I think Notre Dame figures out a way to win.
Yeah, this is a game where the stats pretty clearly define things a little bit in terms of matchups. You know, my success rate measure, you know, how frequently are you getting 50% on first of yards on first down, 70% on second, 100% on third. Syracuse's offense is 15th in passing success rate, but Notre Dame's defense is 12th. Notre Dame's deep offense is actually 33rd in passing success rate. They just don't make any big plays, but Syracuse is 27th and very well organized in pass defense. Run, however, favors both offenses massively. Syracuse is 30th in rushing success rate. Notre Dame's defense is 95th. Notre Dame's offense is 29th. Syracuse's defense is 113th. So it's really going to come down to, you know, Estime and the Notre Dame, the big Notre Dame backs, and Tucker on the edge, like who's doing more damage in the ground game. I guess that's a game Notre Dame could win. I feel horrible about this pick, just like the others, but well, I guess we're going to go with that.
It is good.
It's a party in Jacksonville, Georgia, facing Florida. The Bulldogs, a 22.5 point favorite. Yeesh. Let's go Reese, Pete, Bill.
You'd like to say rivalry game and all of that, but this series has a history of beatdowns. I mean, there have been some great games too, for sure. But the better team in this matchup often takes out a big shovel and hits the other guy in the face. You know, Florida for years was vexed by Georgia. I think the first time in the Gators' history that they ever made it to number one, it was in the 80s, and they played Georgia, and Vince Dooley and company just smoked them. You know, Georgia's defense might not be what it was last year, but the numbers are very similar. Florida's offense has been erratic. You know, Anthony Richardson's capable of making big plays on the ground. That has Kirby worried to death. Georgia's got a couple of guys down, but I just, man, I hate to lay that big a number, but I just don't see how Florida keeps up with them, because I just don't trust enough busted plays, you know, long passes to Justin Shorter actually hitting them against Georgia. Or Richardson escaping pressure and running, you know, 80 yards or whatever he did against LSU. I don't think that happens against Georgia, at least not often enough. So I'm gonna say in beautiful downtown Jacksonville that that the Dogs win and cover the number.
I'm in a little bit of a different boat here. I think the infallibility image we have of Georgia from their opener is been too distinct, and there have just been enough snapshots of vulnerability where I think Florida in a rivalry game with Anthony Richardson's number being called, and you know, Georgia doesn't have an unbelievable pass rush, especially compared to where they were last year. So I feel like they can cobble together some offense, and Florida can figure out a way to cover. You don't want to underestimate the emotion of this game. It's one of the great games to be at and to cover. And I feel like there's some pride on the line here for Florida. So I am going to roll with more of the image of the Dogs I saw in Columbia that night. I'm sure Bill was in attendance with his Barry Odom jersey. Then the Dogs we saw in Atlanta. The truth's probably somewhere in the middle, and I don't think that's 23 points better.
I was just looking at how Georgia's done against projections. They've either overachieved or underachieved in every single game by two touchdowns or more. It's all or nothing. They're either going to win by 38 or like, you know, one. Yeah. But if those are my options, I kind of feel like 38 is way more likely than one. I am going to go like the SP Plus says, like Georgia by 16. I'm going to tack on a touchdown to that, and I'm going to say Georgia covers. I just hate the matchups here. Like Georgia doesn't throw deep very well. Like that's something Stetson Bennett, among all the good quarterbacks in the country, he throws the worst deep ball at the moment. They're not very explosive passing, but he'll beat you with 13-yard passes all day, and Florida has been beaten by 13-yard passes all year. They're going to run as much as they want to. They might give up one big gain to Richardson, but I doubt they give up two. And so that just all these matchups are convincing me that Georgia wins by, you know, 24 to 28 or 38 or whatever. So I'm gonna go that direction.
It is good.
We got a big game in the Big 12 here. Oklahoma State traveling to Kansas State. Kansas State a 1-point favorite, big in the sense that these two teams are trying to keep pace with TCU. So let's go, Pete, Bill, Reese for this one.
Interesting game here as Oklahoma State tries to carry some momentum from the comeback against Texas after it fell apart the prior week against TCU. And these are two teams that I think the spread is right. These are two teams that I don't have, you know, a lot of conviction for either one with where they are. Looks like Spencer Sanders is healthier for Oklahoma State. He, you know, his shoulder seemed to hold up better, and he played well late in the game against Texas, which is obviously good news for Oklahoma State. Kansas State obviously faltered late in Fort Worth, but they have really seemed to find a way to just kind of cobble together good offense in ways to go on the ground. I think this will be a low scoring game. I don't think it will be an aesthetic beauty, and I'm going to take K-State. A little bit because of home momentum, a little bit because Adrian Martinez, as crazy as the sound, I think has earned our trust at this point. So I think they can win a home game here, and I think they can outslug Oklahoma State. I think they can drag this game to the kind of matchup and style that they want for K-State.
28.32 to 28.3. That's the official SP Plus projection for this game. Kansas State by 0.02, which is to say my numbers don't help me at all in this one. I guess the best way to find an advantage here is just to look at the health of the quarterbacks. We were unsure about Spencer Sanders last week, and he came through, just dramatically outdueled Quinn Ewers down the stretch. Looked just fine throwing the ball, ran a little bit. Like that was all, he kind of put to rest any worries there. On the other side, though, I mean, Will Howard, they came out with just a, you know, caught TCU flat-footed after Adrian Martinez left the game, and then TCU adjusted, and that was that. It sounds like Martinez they're not going to know until late, you know, whether he's going to be able to go or not. And just that doubt, I guess, is going to make me lean towards Oklahoma State. I do think they're good enough up front defensively that they can, you know, they'll give up a few big plays because Kansas State makes big plays and Oklahoma State gives them up. But I could see it being a situation like the TCU game where it's just all or nothing. There are some huge explosions for K-State and a whole lot of punts and three and outs. So I guess, I guess I'm going to lean OSU.
This the significance of this game as it pertains to getting to the Big 12 championship game is more than just one game, because the loser not only loses the head-to-head battle in the event of a tie at the end with the other one, but the loser, for all intents and purposes, you know, depending on what happens with TCU, could fall three games behind TCU with tiebreakers and so forth. So this will go a long way toward determining whether the winner still has a chance or if the loser has a chance to get in the Big 12 championship game. This is the hardest one to pick, because if Martinez were healthy, if Howard were completely healthy, I'd go Kansas State at home. Oklahoma State, in addition to Sanders, you know, I haven't seen, and I've done some poking around, some searching, maybe Pete knows, and we just haven't talked about it yet, about the Jason Taylor injury after he made the interception. You know, that didn't look good. So is Oklahoma State down another guy on defense? I'm going to go Kansas State largely on home field. I know better than to doubt the mullet, because they consistently get it done when the backs are against the wall. But given some of the uncertainty on defense and home field, and it's only a point, I'll kind of learn a lesson from all of the home teams that keep winning this year and go with Kansas State.
It is funny with Oklahoma State. It feels like, I mean, they're a very young team in a lot of ways, but if we're talking about, you know, a brawl, it feels like they're in a brawl every single week and they mm-hmm. know how to handle it. And, you know, they let the TCU game just barely slip away from them, but they beat Texas in a brawl and Tech and Baylor. So I just feel like I trust them in those tight quarters more than just about anybody else.
You know, everybody likes to pick on Mike, and, you know, sometimes he brings it on himself. I get that. But at the same time, did you guys see what he said to the team? And it sort of had some play when the injury started to unfold. I think it was Saturday morning when he talked to them. He said, we have, you know, 70 guys on travel and everybody else that's in here dressed. He's like, every one of you is good enough. Said, you wouldn't be here if you aren't. And he said, so, you know, you'll have, if your chance comes and all of that kind of thing. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but basically told them he had confidence in them and they were all good enough to win this game, regardless of what their status was or how much experience they had or what their class rank was, all of that type of thing. And they had guys step in when they had injuries and perform, and they won that game against Texas. I'm going to tell you, I don't feel great picking against them. I really don't, but this is purely a home field pick. How healthy is Oklahoma State? A couple of real tough games back to back. Not that Kansas State didn't have one. And I'm assuming Kansas State will have, you know, one of the quarterbacks healthy enough to play.
God, he's always one of the most fascinating guys. Just, you know, I mean, it does not take much prompting to get him going on a, you know, a kids these days and their cell phones kind of rant. But on the sideline during a game, he is the calmest coach in America. Like, he never betrays any doubt whatsoever. And I do think that bleeds over onto his team a little bit.
Yeah.
Similar to our last game, we've got two teams jockeying for second place in the standings, trying to keep pace with an undefeated Tulane. That's Cincinnati heading to UCF. This game is a pick 'em. Let's go Pete, Bill, Reese.
I think one of the eye-popping scores from last week was UCF's trip to Greenville, where they got pummeled 34-13. The game wasn't close. It was 17-3 at the half. John Reese Plumlee threw three interceptions for UCF, and maybe more notably, Holton Ahlers, who's been a nice quarterback there, but not a dominant one, was 30-36 against the UCF defense. So I really feel like UCF could rebound and they could come back from what was really a spanking by East Carolina, but I'm not going to stake my stake on that, right? Cincinnati's really forged a nice little identity here. It's we've talked about this a little bit on game day, where you can't take that snapshot of week one and carry it on. They were good in Fayetteville in week one, but they were self-destructive and ended up losing to Arkansas. And with Ben Bryan at quarterback, with a little more offensive reliance, with Ivan Pace playing at an All-American level on their defense, Cincinnati has quietly forged a nice little identity. And if there's one thing about Luke Fickell, I believe they have won now 19 straight AAC games. It isn't always pretty. They'll get in mud fights with Tulsa. They'll get in mud fights with USF, but they figure out a way to win. And I'm just not ready with UCF coming off laying that dinosaur egg to pick them to beat Cincinnati and end that streak.
UCF was one of the hottest teams in the country heading into last week. I mean, you know, you beat FAU by 26, Georgia Tech by 17, SMU by 22. Temple is obviously limited, but they won by 57. Like they were flying up the rankings. And then last week happened, and now I have absolutely no idea what to think. I mean, ECU does this like once a year. They put together an inexplicably awesome performance and they're otherwise just kind of decent. So maybe that was it. Maybe it was just a perfect storm of turnovers and everything else. And now UCF will go back to being that other team for a while. But I'm not going to trust that. And in this one, I am just going to lean straight on the numbers. It says Cincy by 1.7, which isn't a lot to go on, but I can get behind that. I think Cincy is just a little bit more trustworthy right now. Luke Fickell always has a thing where, you know, as soon as he can, he goes into game management mode. And sometimes that backfires and suddenly, a 14 or 17 point lead, they have to make a red zone stop to see out the win and whatnot. But, they don't have to, a win by one is a cover in this case, I guess. So we're going to go Cincy.
I think with the Cincinnati defense, it's really hard to, you know, believe that John Rhys Plumlee, exceptional athlete that he is, will be a consistent enough thrower to, you know, make the type of plays you'll need to consistently move against the Bearcat defense. I'm kind of with you. I smelled a little something with East Carolina, with UCF going on the road, maybe not quite being locked in. One of these days, I'm going to learn not to doubt Cincinnati too often. And it's not really that I doubt them. It's just I sort of smell a response from UCF. So pick 'em game at home. I think old Gus will get them up off the deck. And I might do the thing that LC Lee Corso has done with Clemson, while certainly not as serious. But if Cincinnati gets by this again after I pick against them, maybe I will vow to not pick against Cincinnati a single time the rest of the season, no matter who they play. But I'm going to go UCF. What do you think about that?
It is good!
All right. Kentucky with Will Levis heading to Knoxville. The Volunteers, a 12.5-point favorite. Let's go Bill, Reese, Pete.
This is by far, in terms of just matchups and, you know, unit versus unit, man-on-man kind of stuff. Like, this is my favorite matchup of the, or favorite game of the week, I should say. This is, Kentucky right now, sixth in defensive SP plus, which is about what Alabama was, and Tennessee didn't have any problem with them whatsoever, but it's a completely different kind of defense. Lots of zone. They don't blitz a lot. They hem you in. I know Anthony Richardson was supposedly kind of a little bit on the banged up side when they were playing Florida, but he scrambled for 4 yards all game against Kentucky. You know, Hendon Hooker can obviously beat you with his arm, but about once a quarter, he steals a first down with his legs, and you're less likely to do that against Kentucky than other teams. So I think this is just a completely different experience for Tennessee. This is a really, really physical Kentucky team. Obviously now with Chris Rodriguez Jr., they're actually kind of running the ball semi-efficiently, and they're not just asking Will Levis to catch them up and make every third and eight pass anymore. And that's a good thing too. If Levis is healthy, I think this is a massive, massive test for Tennessee. It'll kind of test whether they're just a really fun team with an awesome offense and a defense that's going to eventually let them down, or if they're actually a contender, just a straight SEC and national title contender. So I'm going to say Tennessee survives, but much closer than the line, something more in the 4-7 range, maybe. And I'm picking Tennessee or Kentucky to cover.
Well, I'm not picking Kentucky to cover. Kentucky hasn't scored more than 26 points in an SEC game yet. They did a good job getting pressure on Hooker last year, and he was ineffective when they did. They got more pressure on him than anyone has in any of his starts at Tennessee, pressuring him on 36% of the dropbacks. And maybe they'll do that again. I don't think – I'm not trying to sit here and say that Tennessee's offense is invincible and that you can never figure it out. Nobody will ever be able to stop it or anything like that. But I do think that after a week to come back down following the Alabama performance, a game in which they're going to be challenged because everybody's thinking they're going to be looking ahead to next week. I'm going to take Tennessee to cover because I think the line is way too low. Give me some evidence that, I mean, look, if Kentucky does a great job, Tennessee will probably score 35 points, right? You know, give me some real hard evidence that Kentucky can score more than 21, even against a, you know, a good, not great Tennessee defense, which actually I think does, and Bill, me, you can correct me if I'm wrong, they're a little better against the run than the pass. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that, you know, Levis is a talent, no question about it. But I haven't seen necessarily the productivity that would lead me to believe that they're going to go in there and spin bean all over them. I know he had a great game against them last year. I think Tennessee's a little better this year. I think the Big Orange covers and sets up the showdown with undefeated Georgia next week.
Well, I think the evidence you need that Kentucky can score more is that they scored 42 against them last year.
So you don't think Tennessee's better on defense this year than last year?
I don't think they're 20 points better. I think they are better and they are improved, but I think the improvement of their offense has taken some stress off the defense, and the defense has gotten to play against one-dimensional offenses because they've streaked ahead like they did in Death Valley that day. So I am going to stay with Bill. I'm going to take the wimp out. Kentucky covers, but does not win. I think that Mark Stoops is a master of ball control, game control. I think Chris Rodriguez chunking off 5 yards a clip. I think Kavassier Smoke is a little change of pace. And I think it is grind, take the crowd out of it. And I think there is some pucker power that is going to come to play with Tennessee here. All right. Their season has just been this relentless joyride. And I feel like there's a couple hairpin turns coming on Saturday. I'm not saying Kentucky's going to win, but I just don't think Tennessee is good enough, even with Cedric Tillman likely back, to just streak the quad on every team they play and score 55.
You know, it's funny. I mean, Kentucky has the longest streak in the country of allowing 24 or fewer points. Does that come to an end?
Oh, yeah. I think that.
Okay.
I think that will come to an end. That's a great stat. That's a great stat. Is that Marissa? Is that her handiwork?
I do not think. It was dug up elsewhere, I believe. Yeah.
Okay. That's good. That's a good nugget.
By the way, some gambling advice that nobody listening to this podcast is actually seeking, but you're going to get
it. Don't listen to this podcast if you want gambling advice. That's the best gambling advice.
The tempo. I have an adjusted tempo rating that I've kind of tracked that just basically looks at, you know, it looks at your run pass rate and then looks at your seconds per play and says like who's going faster than expected based on that. Tennessee averages about 6 seconds fewer per snap than the average team based on the run pass rate. That's second in the country, I believe, only behind Ole Miss, actually. Kentucky averages 6.1 more seconds per snap, is 131st, is the slowest team in the country in that way. And so to me, what that screams is if you believe that Kentucky is going to cover and they're going to slow Tennessee's offense down enough to lose by less than 13, I guess, then maybe go with the under two, because that's probably going to, those are probably pretty correlated right there. And on the other side, if you think Tennessee is going to win by 14, 17, 20 points, just go ahead and it doesn't even matter what the over is. Just go ahead and hit the over two.
You know, I think, Bill, I think that's the whole thing, because the pucker factor that Pete brought up,
yeah,
that will enhance if Tennessee starts getting anxious about how often they get the ball. You know, I mean, if that's the path, if you, which I mean, I'm on the side of Tennessee covering, and the game may go that way, but I still think they'll score enough to cover 12.5. But that's the path to either a massive Kentucky upset or to at least staying close is to hold the ball and frustrate them and make them anxious, and anxiety often causes mistakes.
It is good.
All right, fellas, let's shut it down with your locks. We'll go Reese, Pete, Bill. Reese, are you taking the Michigan Wolverines over the Spartans?
I am. I am. I dropped the nugget that no team as an unranked squad has beaten another when ranked more often than Michigan State has beaten Michigan. 11 times they've done it in the AP poll era. Nobody's done it more. Mel Tucker is perfect against Jim Harbaugh in Michigan, 2-0. That comes to an end in a resounding fashion on Saturday in the Big House. Harbaugh has been known to go ahead and lay an elbow smash just to finish you off when given the opportunity. And I think he will. And if you're also looking for omens that maybe Sparty's not quite on its game this year, last week they dropped a game graphic on social media telling you when the kickoff was, network covering, and all of that type of thing. And in an effort to troll Michigan, they took the block M and turned it upside down. You know what an upside down M is? It's a W. And that's what Michigan is going to get. Whatever the number is, that's the lock. I say the Wolverines take out some frustration on Sparty Saturday.
So if I am up, I am going to go on the unnamed principle that we've that I have abided by this year to moderate success, the queasiness principle. If there is a team that I have to pick that just makes me queasy, like how did I possibly get behind X, right? So I look at Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and I see Ole Miss favored by 2.5 in College Station. And there is just no way I would dream of actually putting any energy or meat, what we're betting here, obviously stakes, behind that Texas A&M offense, because it has just been beyond dreadful to watch. Now, is this Ole Miss team a little bit of a one-trick pony? Absolutely. But at least they got a pony. Texas A&M is 105th in rushing offense. It's 87th in passing offense. It's 109 in scoring offense. Ole Miss has distinctly better numbers than that, including their number 16 in scoring offense. And you have to score to win games. Ole Miss can score. Texas A&M cannot score. They're in the same category with Rutgers and Colorado for the number of FBS teams they played and not scored more than 25, I believe, was the number. So in the spirit of scoring more points, I think Ole Miss has shown its deft to do that, and they are my lock of the week.
Yeah. I guess we're allowed to pick up point totals, right, as our locks, sure. Even though we don't do it. It's kind of, it always feels like a cop-out, and it's a, it's not as fun to root for. I did, by the way, in my Friday columns, I just declared that I'm going to stop picking unders because points are fun, and so you're basically rooting against fun. But I found an over I like this week. Arizona State at Colorado is at 46.5. It's been basically there all week. 3 of 14 games that those two teams have played have gone under 46.5 points. That feels like odds I can get behind. Now, 2 of those 3 came in the last 2 weeks. Stanford, you turned that game into a rock fight a little bit, and Lord knows Arizona State's offense isn't consistent at all. But everybody's offense is pretty consistent against Colorado's. So I feel pretty good about 46.5. It's the safest. My numbers are driving me crazy this week because just laying out possible picks for Friday's column and all that, it's saying, hey, Auburn +4 against Arkansas, or ECU +3 against BYU, even though they're guaranteed to have a hangover from last week. I don't feel good about those at all, but I feel pretty good about Arizona State, Colorado over.
Pete, you pulled the old switcheroo. I was like, he's not going to ride the Aggies for the lock here. I thought for just a second when you started, I was like, you've got to be kidding here. But no, that was, and I'm sure you're going to be on this. There are some things bouncing around on the interwebs right now that there's a deeper issue in terms of holding that vaunted class together. But who knows whether that's real or just interweb panic by Aggie fans, which
probably a little bit of both.
Well, there's never a good reason to panic. I mean, how does panicking ever help you? Some, you know, I heard someone say once, you know, well, maybe if, you know, you're headed for sure doom in a plane crash or skydiving accident or whatever it might be. And then the point remains, okay, the parachute didn't open. Now I'm going to panic. How exactly is that going to help me? So panic never helps, but there's probably a fair amount of that going on in College Station. Anyway, gentlemen, I wish you luck to a degree with your with your picks this week. Pete and I are going to have a great time in Jackson. Jackson State's a site for College Game Day tomorrow morning. Hope you'll tune in for that. For Bill and Pete and our entire terrific College Game Day podcast crew, I'm Reese Davis. Please download these podcasts wherever it is that you like to listen. See you next time.